My name is Larry Arn, and I work at Hillsdale College, and I'm going to introduce this panel on transmitting the permanent things, and I can't find my notes, and maybe I don't need them. Ooh, there they are. And there are three panelists, and I'm going to make a few remarks to start, and about the first panelist, Elizabeth Corey. I mostly want to introduce her with reference to her father. I, too, have a daughter who's a PhD, and my daughter, too, is much better looking than I. And I can give you just this comfort, Bill Campbell. My father always said they get their brains from their mother. I still have mine. Elizabeth Corey teaches at Baylor, and she has degrees from Oberlin, LSU, and LSU, and she writes on Michael Oakeshott, and she teaches political philosophy and con law and other stuff in the honors program. Brad Watson used to be a Canadian, now he's an American. He's also had a terrible time deciding what he wants to know because he has degrees in three different fields, from University of British Columbia, from Queen's University, from Claremont, from Catholic Louvain, and from Claremont again. And he's a professor of politics at St. Vincent, where he runs a center and is department chair. And he writes on political thought, American politics, and jurisprudence. And he writes the most witty party invitations I have ever read, by a lot. Michael Jordan is a colleague of mine. He runs our English department. He went to Bryan College, International College, and the University of Georgia. He knows the Southern agrarians. He's like Russell Kirk in this way, in several ways actually, but in this way, he's a great gentleman. A man would never have a better colleague than Michael Jordan. You'll enjoy him. We're going to talk about how to transmit the permanent things, and my point is there's a danger that it's about to become illegal to do that. The tools are in place. I actually mean that seriously. The transmittal of any high thing is an activity that involves more than one person. And such activities are always easy to regulate. Tyranny is destructive of friendship. That's the worst thing about it. It turns families against themselves. It turns friends. It makes it impossible to have the kind of candor that makes friendship possible. The foremost institutions where we transmit the permanent things are called colleges, which comes from the Latin word for partnership, something a bunch of people do together. We've distorted the meaning of the term college now by making its aim diversity, which is actually the opposite idea. And now means of enforcement are coming into place. This is a bipartisan effort. The big idea in the second Bush administration was the No Child Left Behind Act. It actually sent a rich man who was a supporter of Bush to Hillsdale, Michigan, to ask me if I would be of assistance to them in promoting this great national idea. I replied that I didn't know what it was. And he said, "Don't you read the newspapers?" And I said, "Well, yes, but not the parts where I know people don't know what they're talking about." Anyway, I said, "It's a bad title." He said, "Why is it a bad title?" I said, "Have you ever been in a classroom? Somebody's always getting left behind." Well, they passed that thing, and it was the first, it is the first, system of national accountability by local educators, we now call them teachers, schools. And it operates through a regime of testing. They give examinations. The idea, the great idea by Margaret Spellings, a man named Miller from San Antonio, who was a big supporter of Bush, I think he was San Antonio. Margaret Spellings was Bush's education advisor from the day he first got elected governor until he retired. She was Secretary of Education. And my opinion is she was disastrous. And their idea was that if we make up some great national examinations, and we require, and we do this, the federal government still at this minute doesn't actually have the power to do that directly. And so what they did was give states money or make the money. They give them contingent on doing it. And if we do that, then we will present them in a clear format, the same everywhere, and then parents will know whether their children are doing well in school. And I replied to the man who came to see me. I said, do you actually think parents need you to help them figure that out? Because, you know, what do you know about it yourself? Well, they passed that thing, and now almost all states have waivers against it. But they immediately tried to extend it to colleges through the National Commission on the Future of Higher Education. And the idea there was that we would have national standards for higher education, which happens to be what I do for a living. And they left out several topics. For example, in the standards that came out of the commission report, they forgot philosophy, also theology, also literature, also history, also politics. In fact, all of the humanities. And I personally had something to do with opposing that thing, and they couldn't get it through. And so what they did was they thought up the idea. There are 11 regional accrediting agencies. The first one was founded in Chicago in the year 1900. The college where I work is accredited by that one, has been since its first year. They were founded as voluntary associations. Their idea was that we colleges all in the same business together, it's an ancient business, it's been the same for a long time, would appoint peer review panels and certify each other that we are doing what we say we're doing. And in the late 60s, that became the gateway to the federal money. And in the Bush administration, the second Bush administration, it occurred to them that that gave them leverage over these agencies. Because if they removed the certification to accredit a college, those agencies will lose all their customers, excepting us. And it occurred to them that since Congress wouldn't pass this National Commission on the Future of Higher Education report into law, because they'd already had experience with the No Child Left Behind Act and they didn't want to buy that pig twice, that they could just do it this way. And they would be regulating colleges outside the purview of Congress. And that was put in place, and the Obama people love it. And so this ancient thing, a college, and this century and a bit old phenomenon of accrediting them has now fallen into the direct hands of the United States Department of Education. And they have, in the last 3 years, simply transformed it. And there's no place now to report to them about the mission of your place. There are only blanks on online electronic forms to fill out. And most of them extract data, they call it. You can't say in any, I'm searching for the words. You can't make an argument like the argument Ralph made at lunchtime. There's no place for any discussion or reasoning like that. And for everybody but us, most everybody but us, there's Grove City and a couple of others, your livelihood is at stake in this. For us, accreditation is at stake. The new thing is the Common Core that comes after this. The Common Core is just like this, except now it's much more curriculum-based, not just examinations. The Common Core pays a bow to reading old books. But it takes that away in a hurry, because all of the real talk is just like in the No Child Left Behind Act. Margaret Spelling said about that No Child Left Behind Act and about the Higher Education Report, she said, we have to keep up with China, and so we have to have a great national project, she said, to just like the one after we got behind in the Sputnik that led to the moon landing, she said. And I actually got a chance to say to her one time, you know, isn't it true that China is becoming competitive with us because they're becoming rather more like us? And then the second point is, the Sputnik was 58, and the moon landing was 69, and the money started flowing to colleges in about 63. And that means that all those people who went to college on all that new money had exactly 6 years to get a degree, an undergraduate degree, and a degree in physics, and then get out and go build the moon project and get up there, right? I said, you know, you don't even have to know the history. It's simply impossible that the one thing had something to do with the other thing. The Common Core has two main characteristics. The first one is everything is range. And that means you've got to cover a vast sweep in every course. And that means you never get to read The Great Gatsby, which, if it's any good, is by itself a work of art, a microcosm of nature, of the permanent things, a microcosm of the relation between man and the things around him and God above. And the Common Core denigrates any opportunity to spend any time deeply with a book. And then the second point is, how would you identify what would go in the core except by some statement of what it is a human being needs to know in order to call himself educated? And it precludes any such statement by its perpetual discussion of relativism and multiculturalism. And this is the thing to be imposed. And it will go right through the same waves again, and colleges will be increasingly regulated. Now, colleges are important because, as I say, they are the foremost way that we have for that activity I mentioned, which, by the way, is actually the highest human activity. And that activity is precluded if you want to focus on fitting the forms. And the forms become increasingly powerful. The word for that is despotism. The thinking that precluded any idea of there being permanent things in awe and contemplation of which the best lives are lived, that thinking is producing a system of administration designed to preclude the transmission of the permanent things. And that means this is a very good discussion to have because we're in an emergency. Professor Corey.